All right. We believe and are sure. As most of you know, we are dealing now with the church. There may have been some, as always, who wasn't here last week. And so just quickly, as the review, we talked about the church being a part of God's eternal purpose. And that's important for two reasons as we read these verses, so that through the church the manifold wisdom of God might be made known to the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. This is according to the eternal purpose that he has realized in Christ Jesus our Lord. And so first, we recognize that the church was not an afterthought. And there are some doctrines that teach that. Premillennialism, certainly. They're not ashamed to emphasize that. They basically believe the church is plan B. We see that that's not the case here. But the real point that we want to make with this particular passage is that, again, the church is the manifold wisdom of God. It makes known the wisdom of God. You can picture in your mind, even the angels of heaven didn't know exactly how God was going to work out salvation. And you could just see them waiting with anticipation. Peter, in fact, gives us sort of a description of that in 1 Peter chapter 1. And ultimately, of course, at the appropriate time, the church was established. And now even the host of heaven realized how God was going to work everything out. And so the church then represents the wisdom of God. But that's only true if we allow the church to remain as it is, as God has set it forth. When we start to change things with regard to the church, the pattern, the organization rather, when we change the work and the worship of the church, then all of a sudden it's man's wisdom that is emphasized, not the wisdom of God. And so man may get praise, and when man does a lot of different works that God doesn't authorize, it might be impressive to man. But then again, man gets the glory for that. The wisdom of God is only seen in the church as he has set it forth. And so we need to emphasize that. Then we talked about the fact there are many man-made churches. Psalms chapter 127, verse 1, of course, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. And so we need to emphasize the fact that the house that we want to be a part of course, is the Lord's house. In the New Testament, that's the church. We recognize that. And it's interesting that just like we emphasize Matthew 16 at verse 18, Peter said, upon this rock I will build my church. And we constantly emphasize that he mentioned just one church. I will build my church, not churches, but church. And that is something we need to continue to emphasize. Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 said there's one body. And sometimes it's my experience that as time goes on, we live in a religious society in which, religiously speaking, people are excited about the great diversity, about the fact that there's a lot of different churches, the fact that there's a different church on every corner. They wear different names, and they practice things a little bit differently. They're organized differently, and all of that is set forth as a positive thing, as if that's something that is pleasing to God. And so, because that is the way society and the religious world feels, as we begin to emphasize what the Bible simply teaches, even sometimes just by quoting passages, again, there's one body, Paul says. And there's a lot of people, it's been my experience, preachers particularly, who grow weary of that battle and begin to compromise and give in to the ecumenical movement that is in the religious world today. And so you have often churches of Christ then extending fellowship to denominational churches. We have preachers today emphasizing that there are Christians in all churches, in all denominations, and that sort of thing. And that's the easy way out. The fact of the matter is, the truth that we have emphasized all through the years, that Jesus built but one church, is something we need to hold on to, because it's the truth. And in a class like this, in which we're talking about things we believe and are sure about, that ought to be one of those things that we're not guessing about, we're not still trying to figure out. We shouldn't be going back and forth with regard to that. Jesus said, I will build my church. That's what he did. And when I look at this passage and just think about the church from the standpoint of the house of God. You just look it up in your own Bible, and the word house. And of course, in many passages, it'll just be talking about a house. But in all the passages in which it's used in a spiritual sense, in referring to the house of God or the house of the Lord, you'll never read of houses. Always house. Just like we emphasize church. Always church. With regard to the universal church, of course, not local churches, but with regard to the universal church, it's the same with the house. God has one household. That's it. And that's consistent. And so we need to emphasize that. We need to preach that. Paul, yeah.
One of the things that whenever you watch the TV and they do the ad about religion, and they say worship at the church of your choice, just, that's just,
yes.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yes, and that's a great point. I saw a few years back now, I remember seeing that same thing on a truck that happened to be going by. Join the church of your choice. And so now they're making bumper stickers about it. That's something they think to be proud of. We live in a great country, and we have choice. We have freedoms, and here's one expression of that. You can be a part of any church you want to be a part of. And from a physical standpoint and from the standpoint of living in this country, living in America and having choices, certainly that's true. But the Lord only built one church. And the whole point of this particular lesson, as we get started, we're going to talk about a lot of things with regard to the church. But what we're dealing with now is you want to be a member of the church you read about in the Bible. That's what you want to be sure about. And those of us who have obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ and we have been added by the Lord to the church, that is something, again, that we should have confidence in. Someone asks you, are you a member of the Lord's church? Well, I think so. No. Yes, you should say. You should know so. And again, there's just one that Jesus built. And Paul's absolutely right about that. You know, you think about, if you read more modern translations, I talk about the word house. In the ESV, I don't know if this is the case in every place, probably not. But in some places where the word house in the King James appears in connection with the church, the ESV will say household instead of house. And so you start thinking about that. Now you're talking about family, aren't you? When you think about a house, you might think of something physical. But when you think of household, you're thinking about the family. And that's really, as the Bible talks about the house of God, it's talking about the family of God. How many families does God have? Just one. And you want to be a part of the family of God. That's the point in all of this. Well, we talked about following the pattern. Moses, of course, was commanded with regard to the Old Testament tabernacle to do all things according to the pattern. That's important. It cannot be overlooked. He's making the specific point in Hebrews 8 that when it comes down to the tabernacle not made with hands, the church, we have to follow the pattern, just like Moses had to. I don't know that I've ever talked to anyone who would say, you know, Moses had a choice. He didn't have to build that tabernacle to the exact dimensions that God said. He could have ad-libbed if he wanted to. He could have added a few feet here or a few feet there, but no. Everybody understands he had to do exactly what God said. He had to follow the pattern. And so when it translates over then to the, again, the tabernacle not made with hands, it's exactly the same. And that's what the Hebrew writer was talking about. Everybody should see that. We don't have liberties to add a foot here or to add an inch there. It has to be according to the pattern. And so that when we start looking at things, then you see that a lot of churches today, these man-made churches, then don't resemble what you see in the Bible because they're not following the pattern. All right, we closed off. We were looking at the name. We won't rehash that again, but the name is important. I'm glad. I hope you're glad. If you're a member of the Church of Christ, you can actually find a passage in the Bible. You can put your finger on the passage. When you're talking with people, you can say, listen, this is the church I'm a member of. I can read about it. Show me your church in the Bible. If you're and you be as kind as you can be and sincere, you know, you want to try not to rub people the wrong way when you're talking with them. But you get to a point when, as I've often said, you have to connect dots. And sometimes that's difficult. In other words, people are going to be offended. But sometimes you just have to connect the dots for them. And so you might, if you're studying with a Lutheran, you might ask them, show me the Lutheran church in the Bible. You turn over to Romans 16:16. Say, see, here, I'm a member of this church, the Church of Christ. Show me the Lutheran church in the Bible. Obviously, they won't be able to do it. But they've probably never, many have probably never even thought in those terms. The Baptists, show it to me in the Bible. Do you read anywhere in the New Testament, in the Bible anywhere about the Baptist church? No. So when you're dealing with somebody and you want them and you're asking them, and it's a legitimate question, you have the right in a Bible study to ask somebody, show me the Baptist church in the Bible. And they won't be able to do it. So now what they'll end up doing is just going to a New Testament church and say so. But they won't be able to find the Baptist church in the Bible. You can find a passage that makes reference to churches of Christ. Now, it's not an official name, and we'll get to that in a minute. It's a designation, but that's what they were referred to as, churches of Christ, and we ought to. A couple of hands. I'll get you to, yeah, Barbara, and then. Yes, that's right. So we have making the point that I made earlier, as a citizen of the United States, you have a right as a citizen, a right given to you by man to join the church of your choice. I mean, you have that capability. But with regard to God, from a spiritual standpoint, you only have a choice to obey the gospel or don't obey the gospel. And if you obey the gospel, you'll be added to the one church that Jesus built. So, I mean, we need to distinguish between those things. Go ahead, Mary.
In the honest part, when you were saying you were in Bible study and somebody showed you the Baptist.
Yes.
I
Yes. Yes.
And that because years kept going and I matured, that was the statement that really got me going. What?
Yes.
You don't read about the Catholics in the Bible, yet we're the ones the Bible is meant for.
Yeah.
And so just talking to them more and more is what made me realize they're the quack.
Yeah. Very good. And see, there's a lot in personal experiences, there's a lot to learn from that. First of all, you don't be surprised if when you get to dealing with people and we become, again, evangelistically minded and you're sitting at a kitchen table, whatever, you're talking to somebody, they're going to think a lot of things you say is quacky. I mean, why? Because they have never heard it before. They have in the religious circles that they're very comfortable with, in their churches, where the people that they think are the ones with the authority and who know the Bible and all that, who give them their instruction. So their own personal instructors have been telling them something very different than what you're now sitting before them telling them. And at first, you know, it's like Festus and Paul. Much learning has made you mad. You're out of your mind. And they might be polite sometimes, sometimes not, don't be surprised if they think like that. And at the same time, you have to have patience. Because as Mary, now whenever Mary deals with somebody, she knows, listen, I remember feeling being in exactly the same spot they were in. And we have to be sensitive to that when we're talking with people. That you can't expect them just in a split second see everything. And so they may be very honest, but it's because of what they have been taught. It's been ingrained in their mind sometimes from the days of their youth. Parents and grandparents have felt the same way. Now we have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're learning something new. We have to have patience with them. That's just the way that is. So, yeah.
So I was roughly 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. I wasn't
baptized until I was 25. Yeah, wow. So it took you a while to take that journey. And that, listen, we want everybody to hear the gospel and obey it immediately. And sometimes it may happen a little bit more quickly than 8 years. But the point of it is, we have to be patient with people. But at the same time, we don't ever want to compromise. We have to get to the point where we teach them the truth, even when it's uncomfortable for them and maybe for us. We have to do that. But we just have to make sure we do it patiently, do it with love and kindness when we're doing it. But this is the approach, again, marks of identification. It is the right approach. I don't know who first came up with these terms or whatever, but it's the approach that we have made for years. Remember that the devil is crafty. He has filled the world with all kind of counterfeit churches. So this is a good approach, just showing people, let's identify the church you read about in the Bible. Name is one of them. It's not the only thing, but name is important. Again, I said a while ago, it's not the official. Church of Christ is not the official name of the church. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 at verse 2 uses the terminology, the church of God that is at Corinth. And the point that you need to make to people as you're studying with them, you need to have whatever church you're a member of has to have a scriptural designation to it. And God needs to get the glory. Now you can point out in this particular passage, Church of God, that the God under consideration is Christ. The house of the Lord, that is of course referring to the Church of Christ. It's not, I think I may have told you before of the fellow who argued with me, I can show you two churches in the Bible. Church of Christ and Church of God. No, it's not two different churches. It's the same church. Look over at 1 Timothy chapter 3 and notice what Paul says at verse 15. He says, if I delay, that you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of the truth. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. So what is he talking about? He's talking here about the household of God, the church of the living God. Those, by the way, are scriptural designations of the New Testament church. We could use those terms if we wanted to. We could refer to ourselves as the household of God if we wanted to. We could have a sign out there that said the household of God. That would be scriptural. It's in the Bible. But what God is under consideration? We know there's one God, but there's three persons who make up the Godhead. And all you have to do is read the very next verse that says he was... Or continue with verse 16, he was manifested in the flesh. Who was that? That was Christ. Was the Father ever manifested in the flesh? No. The Son was manifested in the flesh. That's Jesus. He was vindicated by the Spirit. When? When he was raised from the dead. He was seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, that is the Gentiles, believed on in the world, and then finally taken up into glory. All of that describes Jesus. So in the previous verse, when it talks about the household of God, we know who's under consideration. The church belongs to Christ. He bought it with his blood. And so, but the point of it is, in all of those designations, then God is glorified. Christ is glorified and not man. What does Luther glorify? A man. What is the term Baptist? A man. Episcopalian. Any church that is not scriptural. Now there are a few denominations that wear the right name, but remember, you can have the right name and still be the wrong church, but you can't wear the wrong name and be the right church. And so that's important. So you're trying to teach people, here's all these churches in the world, and they're all counterfeit. They all claim to be the church of Christ. How do we identify the New Testament church? Well, let me give you some marks that identify. Here's one. What designation does your church wear? Then there's the time the church was established. That's important. And this, obviously, in these things, we're talking about the universal church. Isaiah chapter 2 at verse 2, now it will come to pass that in the last days, it will come about that in the last days, the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains and will be raised above the hills and all the nations will stream to it. And so now we have a time frame. That the house of the Lord, what's the house of the Lord? We just looked at a passage in 1 Timothy chapter 3 that's referring to the church. So much for premillennialism who says the church is never mentioned in the Old Testament. Why? Because of them it's an afterthought. We know better than that. It's not an afterthought. But when would it come about? When would it be established? In the last days. Now we're all familiar with that because we've just studied the book of Acts. And we remember in Acts chapter 2 that the apostles spoke in tongues. They were accused of being drunk. Peter said, these men aren't drunk, as you suppose, but this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. And what did he talk about? The Spirit being poured out. When would the Spirit be poured out? In the last days. And so we have a passage for that. This is that, or this is what was uttered through the prophet Joel. In the last days it shall be. Now again, Peter's saying, this is that then. He's saying, these people aren't drunk, but this is what Joel talked about. This is exactly what Joel said would come. And so we know then on the day of Pentecost, they were in the last days. There's no question about that. Isaiah said that the house of the Lord would be established in the last days. So we begin to see the time period when the church was established. Then, of course, we can begin to narrow things down a little bit. Actually, as most of you know, the terminology of the last days really is referring to the dispensation of Christ. And so that's a long period of time. Are we in the last days right now? Yes. We'll be in the last days until whenever Christ comes back. And so those are many years. So we have to kind of narrow that down. Turn over to Daniel chapter 2. This is a passage. Again, when you're talking with people and dealing with people, you want to remember. And you don't have to know every detail about this particular prophecy that came. You remember Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And so Daniel is going to interpret the dream. The primary passages or verses are verses 36 through 44. Those are the ones that you'd want to read. Verse 36 says, this is the dream. And now we will tell the king the interpretation. You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power and the might and the glory, and into whose hand he has given wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heavens, making you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. And so he had this dream. He saw this great statue. Daniel is saying, Nebuchadnezzar, you, more particularly, the kingdom that he was over is the head of gold. That's what we find first. And then as we read through this, you go ahead and read through those passages. All you have to really do is know the history. There's no doubt about these things. Daniel is setting forth the kingdoms that came after the Babylonian kingdom. And so we can't make it up. We know that it was the Medo-Persian Empire that followed the Babylonian Empire. We know that led by Alexander the Great, the Grecian Empire came after that, and then the Roman Empire came. Those are just historical facts that nobody can make up. It's why premillennialism, now it says in the days of those kings, then that God would set up the kingdom of heaven. And because you can't change those scriptural facts, that's why premillennialism says, well, the kingdom, the Roman Empire is going to be revived sometime in the future. Because they have to have that. Because this passage is clear of when the kingdom of heaven would be established. In the days of those kings. What kings? Probably referring to the Roman emperors of the Roman Empire. There's some interpreted as just taking the whole thing together. That sometime during the period between the Babylonian Empire and the Roman Empire, the kingdom of heaven would be set up. However you interpret that, the outcome is the same. It won't make a difference. But we know then, as we think about it, if the kingdom's going to be set up in the days of those kings, Rome fell in 476 AD, so the kingdom under consideration can't come after that. It has to come before that, or else it's no longer in the days of those kings. And so we understand that the kingdom fell. Well, look over at Daniel chapter 7. We can narrow it down even a little bit more, because again, that's a long period of time, depending on how you interpret that. Either way, it's a long period of time. But in Daniel chapter 7 at verse 13, it says, "And I saw the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days." The son of man obviously is Jesus. The Ancient of Days was a description of the Father. And so we have a picture of Jesus going to the Father. So this is a picture of the ascension of Christ. And was presented before him. Now look at verse 14. "At that time it says, to him was given what? Dominion and glory and a kingdom." Now watch how this kingdom sounds pretty much the same as what Isaiah described in Isaiah chapter 2. It is a kingdom that all peoples, nation, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. Didn't Isaiah say that all people would flow unto it? Exactly what this is, the same kingdom that is under consideration, that Daniel is dealing with. It is the house of the Lord. And now we narrow it down then to the ascension. That took place, of course, we know, and we're not trying to get this down to the minute or to the hour or anything like that. We understand that Jesus Christ, we know from the book of Acts, he ascended on high. And then just a few days later, then the day of Pentecost came along and the gospel was preached and the kingdom of God was established. And so on the day of Pentecost, then that's when the kingdom of God, the church of Christ, started. And that's a mark of identification. We understand. And any church that now comes into existence after that can't be the church you read about in the Bible. And of course we see some of these things. We'll look at it in a second. But the place, where's the place? Going back, I think we just read verse 2, but verse 3, "Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God, the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." So it is amazing then the detail that we have from prophecy, that we know exactly when the church would be established, and now we know exactly where it would be established. It has to be established in Jerusalem. That's where the Lord, the word of the Lord would come from. And the founder, of course, is Christ. We've already quoted Matthew chapter 16 at verse 18. We've even made reference to Acts 20 at verse 28. Where the Jesus, of course, purchased the church with his own blood. And so Jesus is the founder of the church. There is no human founder. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, founded his church. That's what he promised. "I will build my church." He did it. So all of these things, we went through that kind of quickly, but all of those things are marks of identification then. The time, the first century, the day of Pentecost, somewhere around A.D. 30. The place, Jerusalem, the founder, Christ, the name, Church of Christ, or a designation that is scriptural. But all of this we can read in the Bible. We can put our finger on the passage. And that establishes, those are real marks of identification. Church starts sometime after the first century, not the church of the Lord. Someplace other than Jerusalem can't be the church that belongs to Christ. Founded by some other man, wear some other name, it can't be the church you read about in the Bible. Now, through the years, there's nothing, if there was some way that we could present the gospel of Christ to people that would assure us that they would obey the gospel, we would use that every time without fail. That would be wonderful. But the fact of the matter is, people reject the gospel. Some receive it, some reject it. It's the way it's always been. But we need to do our very best to present the gospel to people in a way that will give them the best chance to break through their prejudices, break through their tradition, and setting forth these marks of identification has worked for years and years and years. And it should work not only with our evangelistic efforts, But as we go through this, every time you talk with somebody about these things, every time you study with someone, it ought to help you with your own conviction. These, again, are things that we believe and are sure. These are things that don't change. You couldn't convince me, if your life depended on it, that the church wasn't established somewhere around A.D. 30. Because I can read about it in the Bible. You couldn't convince me. You could use the greatest vocabulary in the world. You couldn't convince me, if you had to, that somehow the church didn't begin in Jerusalem. I know it did. I could read about it in the Bible. But when you begin to look at all the denominational churches, you see that they all started the wrong time, the wrong place, by the wrong founder, over and over again. We don't have time to put up all of the different denominations. But that's effective, showing people. It's been effective through the years. It ought to be effective in helping you again with your own conviction. You take the Baptist church there that is so popular today. Wrong time, wrong place, wrong founder, wrong name. It's a church you don't read about in the Bible. And so it is important that we understand. Now, one thing, I don't know how much time we have here, as we think about these things, some clarification probably needs to be made. Or at least one of the things, I know from doing radio work, some of the things that how people would counter this. A lot of people you deal with won't do this. But on the radio, sometimes we get preachers calling in, and they would, you know, they're used to this. They've heard us emphasize these things before, so they try to come up with arguments. And there's a lot of people out there that would call you a Campbellite. And you're a Campbellite. That's what you are, a Campbellite. Why? Because they would emphasize that Alexander Campbell started the Church of Christ. Just like we have up here, these different individuals and places and that sort of thing, they would put underneath all of this, they would put Alexander Campbell as the founder. But you know what they can't do? They can't put a time or place or anything like that. Because the fact of the matter is, Alexander Campbell didn't start the Church of Christ. And you can get, I have it if you ever want it. I can give you dates of times, references to Churches of Christ before Alexander Campbell ever came to this country. And so there's no question that he didn't start. But that's what a lot of people think. He started the Church of Christ. So you all are Campbellites. But they can't do what we just did. They can't show where the Church of Christ first started, except looking at Acts chapter 2. See, if the Church of Christ was a denominational church that had a start just like these churches, then they could identify exactly where, exactly when, and by whom it started. The fact that nobody can do that shows that no man started. The church was started by Christ, and that's all the reference we have. Now, here's something that, again, throws people off sometimes. They'll say, well, You show me then the Church of Christ in 906 A.D. You give me a reference of a local church in Turkey in 1408 or whatever. And I can't do that. There are some preachers who have claimed that we can trace the Church of Christ from now all the way back to the first century. I like to see that. I don't know how you do that. If a preacher could do that, would be very valuable. In other words, I don't know what the church was doing. What we do know is that the church, this New Testament church that you see in the first block there, that it went into apostasy. That's what the development of the Catholic Church was. It took 600 years, but it went into apostasy. Remember, we've talked about in previous lessons that it was probably even in the first century where Christians started referring to elders as bishops and making a distinction and that sort of thing. That happened no later than the early second century, and there's some indication that even in the first century they were doing that. And so the church was going into apostasy. Paul himself said that many would leave the faith. He said himself in 1 Timothy chapter 4 that there would be an apostasy. And so what I'm saying to you in all of this, I don't know that I can trace local churches of Christ. Was there a time on earth when there was no faithful, sound local church of Christ? I don't know. I'd like to think not, that there was always somewhere a local church of faith, of God's people who were faithful and sound, even though we don't have record of it. But here's why it doesn't matter. What we have always had is the seed. And that's the important thing. Because when you plant a seed, what's going to be produced? Whatever kind of seed it is, if it's an apple seed, it's going to produce an apple. We have the seed that was planted in the first century. So as long as the seed is here, then the church is alive and well. And all I know is this, we have the same seed. So we come up with the same thing. The church today looks exactly like, I'm not talking about in every little detail of tradition and customs and that sort of thing. How many of you think that the church at Troas started their worship service at 10 o'clock in the morning? We're not talking about that sort of stuff. But the work, the organization, all those things that are important, that we're exactly like the first century church because we have the same seed. The seed will always produce fruit after its kind. And so one thing that I could tell you, I may not be able to trace in 726 AD where there was a local church in this particular city or on this particular continent. I don't care about that. I have the seed and it produces the same thing. And that's the thing. And nobody can ever put us on a list like this and say, here, listen, the Lutheran church, nobody doubts that they started at 520. A Lutheran would never come to you and say, no, that's not when we started. They know that's when they started. It's in their history books. They have record of that. Now, the only exception to that would be the Catholic Church. Because they developed over a 500 year period. And so that's a little bit more difficult. Now, what we have on the screen before you, Boniface III, that's the first time that an individual had universal authority. There were popes before Boniface III. And sometimes people will call you on, oh, you say the Catholic Church. But there's a pope in 300, yes, but there was more than one pope. But Boniface III was the only one who had universal authority. But they actually started, and that was in 606, and that's why we give that date. But they started over a period of time. But nobody could identify, because the only record we have of the Church of Christ being started is in Acts 2, on the day of Pentecost, in the last days, founded by Christ. And that's what we have to remember. All right. Sorry I went a little bit over. We'll pick up on that next week.